This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The United Auto Workers Union has opened its constitutional convention in Detroit, and delegates plunged right into one of the most important and controversial proposals, approving an increase in member dues. After a two-hour debate, the vote was yes to the measure that would hike dues for the first time since 1967. For a veteran auto worker that makes $28 an hour, that dues increase amounts to $14 a month or $168 a year. Newer union members in the lower $14 an hour wage tier would pay half that amount. Backers won over the delegates with the argument that the dues hike is critical to fattening up the depleted strike fund and to pay for the union's organizing efforts. And organizing appears to be needed amidst voices asking, is the UAW dead? Once the union boasted a formidable membership of 1.6 million members, that was in the 1970s. Today, fewer than 390,000. Earlier this year, the union poured much effort into organizing workers at the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. But more than 53% of those workers said, no thanks. It was a gut blow to the union, which first announced it would challenge the vote and then quietly withdrew the challenge, essentially laying down its arms and withdrawing from the field of battle. So we wondered, should the question be, does it even matter if the UAW is dead or not? Jack Lessenberry joins us. He's Michigan Radio's political analyst. And from Wayne State University, Professor Merrick Masters joins us. He's director of labor at Wayne. Merrick, is the UAW relevant today?
Yes, it is relevant, although it is a small share of its previous self. It still represents auto workers in the big three companies that employ most of the auto assembly workers in the United States. The automobile and auto-related industry employs directly or indirectly about 8 million people. It contributes about $800 billion in sales to the economy. So the UAW is a very relevant institution in many ways.
But I hear you were saying employs about 8 million people, the auto industry.
Auto and auto-related industries directly and indirectly employ about 8 million people, yes.
And there are 390,000-some members of the UAW.
Well, the UAW is not represented in all of those parts. That includes dealerships, that includes offshoots of various other economic activity. The auto industry has a tremendous multiplier effect, and the auto workers are really central to the auto industry, particularly the big three in the United States.
So does it seem, Jack Lessenberry, that these 390,000-some members of the UAW are kind of driving the bus for the other millions of auto-related workers?
No, I wouldn't say that. In fact, it's important to note that about a third of them, Dr. Masters may know exactly, a third of the UAW members aren't in the automotive industry at all. There are other people that the union has managed to organize. I think it is hard to exaggerate the importance of their failure to organize the Volkswagen plant in Tennessee. Both the management wanted them to. The management wanted the UAW to succeed, and they still couldn't get the workers to do it. Of course, other people, people were advertising, people who have, for other reasons, are anti-union, but still, this was their great failure. It means Bob King's union presidency was devoted to trying to organize transplants, and he's utterly failed at that. We are at a point now where, if we're not there, we're close to it, where more auto workers, I'm talking about assembly line auto workers, not people at dealerships, are not represented by the UAW than people who are. And I think that unless things change, this union is going to continue to dwindle.
Mayor, could I get your thoughts adding to what Jack said about why that effort in Tennessee flopped?
Well, I think the effort in Tennessee is symbolic of a broader problem that the UAW has faced. We've faced transplants in the United States for over 30 years. In Tennessee, for example, over a 30-year period, they had their first transplant 30 years ago. The auto industry now employs about 3.3% of the workers in Tennessee, and he's absolutely right. At sometime in about 2017, employment in the transplant auto assembly industry will exceed employment in the big three auto assembly industry, and that is exclusively non-union, that is the transplant industry. The UAW and other unions have not had any success whatsoever in organizing the transplants, and I think that while I don't think the UAW is irrelevant, I do think that it has very significant problems. And part of its problem is a result of the significant drop in manufacturing employment and auto employment, particularly since the year 2000. I mean, in Michigan, we shed 28% of our manufacturing jobs since then. In the United States, we shed over 30% of our manufacturing jobs. Auto industry employment was particularly hard hit, and those were union jobs. However, the value proposition that the UAW has to make has yet to be made. And it's quite clear, based on the VW vote and other things in general, that it hasn't been able to sell its value to workers. And until it does so, it will be increasingly marginalized.
Is it hard to develop that sales pitch to sell its value to workers because perhaps the value isn't what it was?
Well, I think absolutely, and I think unions need to adopt an entirely new business model. The model is broken. It's not just relevant with respect to the UAW. It's relevant with other unions as well. Unions in the private sector only represent about 6.7% of the workforce, about 11.2 or 11.3% of the workforce overall. It becomes highly marginalized as its membership in the private sector continues to shrink. Therefore, I would suggest it adopt a much more different approach towards trying to organize workers than it has currently.
If you've just joined us, that was Merrick Masters, who is a director of labor at Wayne and also a professor of business and an adjunct professor of political science at Wayne State. And he's joined by Michigan Radio's political analyst Jack Lessenberry as we look at the question, what is the relevance of the United Auto Workers Union in 2014? And Jack, I'd like to get into your thoughts on the UAW's big push in the 2012 election in Michigan to lock those collective bargaining rights into the Constitution. There was that immediate smackdown by the state legislature in passing right to work. What else did that defeat mean to the union, both short-term and long-term?
Well, of course, it was a defeat on many levels. It was not just UAW. There are other unions involved, too, but they sort of rashly attempted to enshrine collective bargaining in the state constitution. And then, of course, the Republican legislature and governor rammed through right to work in the lame duck session. I'm not sure that you can say for sure this would not have happened had the ballot proposal not been on there. There are a lot of people who wanted to stick it to the union in any event, but it meant the union spent a lot of money, and it meant that the union gradually will dwindle further since workers will be able to opt out of the union. Probably not a whole lot of them will do so at first, but every little bit of dues lost helps. Helps hurt, rather. Mm-hmm. Republicans in particular would like to see union support further diminished because the unions are massive contributors to Democratic causes and campaigns, and they'd love to sort of cut off their money flow. But I think long-term, I mean, Professor Masters is absolutely right, you have to come up with a new model. If you can't organize, auto workers are about the easiest people for the unions to organize because they are still workers who all go to work in one big box place. They're easy to get at. We become a nation of independent contractors, of knowledge workers, of this guy working here by himself in his house and this woman working over there in this building. And those folks are hard to organize. So a lot of union leadership seems to have figured out what to do in 1936. If 1936 ever comes back, they're ready. But it's not coming back. And they have to come up with a new model. And I don't see the UAW is representing workers who are, I think the majority of their members are retired. They're representing older workers in older plants who are dwindling. And there's a lot of discontent among younger UAW workers because they agreed to this sort of devil's bargain to save the auto companies, where new UAW assembly line workers make only about 60% of what the old ones did. These people are making perhaps $30,000 a year. You can't buy a new car on that, let alone a house. And so there are a lot of problems they're facing, and they certainly need people are always looking for the great next leader, the guy on the white horse, the next Walter Reuther. That would be nice, but they also need a coherent strategy, and it's eluded them.
Merrick, about that two-tier wage system, what do you believe the result of that? We know they had to accept it as the automakers were battling back from bankruptcy in the case of GM or Chrysler and trying to keep out of bankruptcy in the case of Ford. What has been, like on a granular level, the result of that two-tier system? When you walk into the plants and you look at these workers on the line, what's been the result of that two-tier system?
Well, I think there's a lot of disaffection among those that are paid at the lower tier, and I think that rubs off on the upper tier. That doesn't help people at the upper tier because it makes it harder to raise wages to begin with. And what it says is that you have a lower standard in the industry. I think that Marchione said it correctly when, you know, you really create two classes of workers, and I don't think that is sustainable on a long-term basis. I think also you have to look at the ramifications of it, which were very evident at VW in Tennessee, and that it makes the case for the union very difficult to make. Because when people look at the union situation and they say, well, people coming into the union now, they're making $10, they're making $14 an hour. What's the benefit of having a union when I'm making $20 an hour? And I think that when you put all this together in one big ball of wax, it creates the impression that the UAW has failed to deliver the kinds of benefits that it was able to in the past. And that's why I think Jack is absolutely right when he said that they may have figured out how to organize in 1936, but that's not relevant today. And the model that they have to use to organize is much different. And I would say that along those lines, a couple of things are in order. Number one, right now they follow the employer, but I think that's an increasingly less reliable way to organize. I think they need to follow the worker. And they need to invest in the worker and make the worker a greater value proposition to employers so that they, when they move across organizations, they can make a claim for higher wages and higher benefits. The second thing I would encourage unions to do is to focus on setting minimum standards like they do in professional models, professional athletes, et cetera, rather than trying to set ceilings on performance.
Mark, are you saying that it should be more like the sort of carpenters union model where the worker would actually be an employee of Local 50 of the UAW, and that's who he would work for, and no matter what plant he went to?
For certain occupations, that's a different approach for unions to take. And I think that what they need to do is really tie themselves to the worker and add value to the worker. I don't think trying to organize a variety of disparately located plants, like the McDonald's, is the wave of the future. I think an entirely new approach is required. There's no guarantee that this will work, and I think we also need to look at changing labor law to be more flexible. The labor laws today are pretty inflexible. It only recognizes one type of union. And unions only have one model that they try and replicate place after place after place. And I think that if the mantra of the workplace today, it's flexibility, it's change, it's the opportunity to develop personally and to grow your skills. And I think unions need to be equipped in the representation model to address those kinds of needs.
You know, a lot of us, Jack, I'm sure I can evoke some memories with you. I can remember covering the UAW in those big, big days. I can still see Big Mike Rinaldi, the powerful president of Local 600, leading a march of his membership right to the front door of the Ford Glass House in the early 80s. A force to be reckoned with. And I'm wondering, do you think the way the auto companies regard the UAW has changed since then?
Well, I think it's been very gradual, and I think you also have to realize that beyond union and company, it's a change in the global marketplace. It used to be that the auto company, they would have negotiations, and the union would ask for something, and the auto companies would give it to them and pass the cost on to the consumer. And prior to the onset of major foreign competition, prior to, say, the mid-1970s, you could get away with that. You can't get away with that anymore. It is sort of a different ball game. And sure, the unions have diminished, but so have the companies themselves. And we are now at a point where more than half the autos bought, not in the world, more than half the autos bought in the United States are being sold by foreign-owned companies. This is very sobering for both sides.
Yeah, I would say there's an interesting statistic I came across that in 1929 there were about 32 million automobiles in the United States. 90% of them were made in the United States. At the start of World War II, about 75% of the automobile manufactured were manufactured in the United States. Today, he's absolutely right. About 45% of the auto sales are from the big three. The rest of them are from transplants or from imports. The companies face a much different environment. The unions face a much different environment. There's a lot more competition. The companies have shrunk, hence union memberships have shrunk. They've had to be more agile. I think they're very mindful of the UAW and very respectful of their position, but the world has changed, and neither party has the power vis-a-vis the market that it once did.
Let me just add something. It's very easy to bash the UAW for a lot of stupidity and blunders, since they've made their share of those. But there's a bumper sticker that I see sometimes that say, the unions, thank the unions are the people who brought you the weekend. And the unions were undoubtedly responsible in a great extent for the middle class in this country. And without them, if you have this model of the two-tier auto, if you were paying all the auto workers the lower tier wage, that means these people aren't going to be able to buy the products they're making. Even Henry Ford, who was probably one quarter genius and three quarters raving lunatic, realized that you needed to be able to have your workers afford to buy what you make. And if we get away from that, we get to a position where workers have no benefits and not very good salaries, I think we'll all be diminished.
Yeah, and that's why I think the UAW and other unions are still relevant, because they're really the only voice out there that makes that point in any coherent way. There are so many claimants on the public trough, so many claimants on public policy, that rarely do you see people advocate the need to raise the standard in the middle class. I think you see that even among some of the Republicans today pushing for a higher minimum wage, a realization that you've got to put more in the pocketbook of consumers in order to buy more, because this is really a consumer-driven economy.
And that was Merrick Masters, Director of Labor at Wayne, joined by Jack Lessenberry, Michigan Radio's political analyst. And once again, the news out of Detroit today is the UAW opens its constitutional convention in Detroit. It began after a two-hour debate by saying yes to a hike in member dues, the first hike since 1967.